Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Geek Wave. This is the low-budget show. It's the show so low. You just get this. It has no budget. No budget. Isn't that insane? Show so low, it has no budget. But it's fun. We make do here. We have a good time. Fun topic today. Tom Cruise. We'll get into it a bit here. We got a couple things we need to get into first, but just a couple things up top. Live show is starting soon. By the time this comes out, I think the live show will be starting maybe in a couple weeks. We'll see what happens. I got to do it. Merch store is up too. If you want to get some merch for this, the Geek Wave shirt, a Geek Wave cup, go ahead, buy it there. It's available for your pleasure or my pleasure. It's somebody's pleasure, but you can get it there. Also, is there an also? I don't know. Maybe there isn't an also. Just great stuff all around. Life has become intimate again, hasn't it? It's just personal and fun, and we are enjoying it for all of its treasure troves. Yeah. May has been a brutal brutal month for me in terms of these revenue streams, but you don't need to know that. I don't know why I told you, but now you know. So, yeah, we got some news to talk about before we jump into a really fun topic. Is it fun? It's fun to me because I think the guy's insane. So, yeah, news. Let's get into the news. I don't think I got much else to say. Just stalling for time till I open up my notes on here. Yes. Avatar The Way of Water trailer. We got it. It premiered in front of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Some theaters were playing it on loop. I know some people were talking like some screenings where there's like, yeah, you can go watch the trailer after you watch like your critic review or your critic screening of Doctor Strange. So here it is, the long-awaited sequel. Is it long-awaited? I have a lot of interesting opinions on Avatar. None of them are bad. I think this movie, the first one that is, represents an important part of the cultural zeitgeist, and that is the progression of actual filmmaking, where it's like, no, we can make it look insanely good on digital film. So, I think it's really cool that way. The sequel, however, I think I talked about this a little time last week, is it really worth it? Like, is it worth it? It's been 13 years. I think the technology has caught up to it. And is that something we are interested in seeing still? I have no doubt in my mind that after 13 years, Cameron will not put... He will. He'll make something special. And that's kind of cool to think about. But everything else, I'm just like, how do you make this special again? I guess the view count for the like actual trailer is higher than a lot of the stuff we've seen in Star Wars recently from Disney. So maybe there is still a market for this. I personally don't know what the market is. I did like some of the stuff we saw in the trailer. Big sea creatures, big bird sea creatures. I like it. That's kind of fun. I always like a full-on alien world. I know we got like our weird people in here and their big mech suits and stuff. I just like a good world with a bunch of weird characters. I think it's really cool and something more science fiction stories need to focus on. Your lead character doesn't need to be like a human. Make them something else. And I think Avatar is like the founding father of that idea. You know, where finally it's like, hey, we can actually focus on this thing and make it look nice. It's kind of cool. So I don't really have many opinions on it, I guess. I am very excited to see it. I think it's going to be a fun idea. I think Avatar is back in a weird way. I hope we get a lot of the sequels, The Way of Water, The Way of Fire, The Way of Earth, The Way of Wind. That's what you should call them. The Way of the Elements. Make that the thing. That should be what is happening in there. And honestly, that's all I really got to say on it, but it's kind of exciting. I will probably be talking more about Avatar. I think I want to do a video talk about like what it means for like cinema and stuff, but we'll see what happens. Moving on from Avatar, just a little bit of casting news. Alan Ritchson joins Fast X. Cool. Bound to happen. Do they find a director yet? Probably not. Christopher Walken joins Dune 2. This one excited me more. And I want to talk about this a little bit. I feel like he's coming back. I know Christopher Walken like never left. Like he didn't go anywhere. He wasn't like hiding from us. But you can distinctly feel his presence returning. If you haven't watched Severance, he plays a role in Severance that I didn't expect from Christopher Walken. I just didn't expect it. He was always just distinctly a certain actor. And you see him in that show and you're like, okay, he's doing television now. Okay, is he that desperate for money? I guess Pacino also did Hunters, so nobody's really desperate for money. They just do good stuff. So the fact that he's doing a Dune thing, because he's never really been like a part of a big franchise thing before, has he? Not that I can remember. I think it's kind of cool. He's going to be the Emperor, the Fourth Emperor, whatever. And yeah, that's great. Bring him in there. We're seeing a resurgence of him. Like I said, he didn't go anywhere. It's like the Nicolas Cage thing, where suddenly Nicolas Cage is appearing in all this other stuff. And you're like, oh, Nicolas Cage is back. Not that he went anywhere, because he didn't. But now, like, they're both back in this prominent state, and I think that's kind of cool. So Dune 2 is shaping up to be a very fascinating movie. Honestly, I thought the first one was good. It's that thing again, where almost all these things start to feel the same after they become so engrossed in like the science fiction world we're building. It's this thing I kind of talk about before. When you are adapting a dystopian future, a fantasy series, a science fiction series, the capabilities of like the real world limit how you make things look. So they all start to feel and look the same. And I think Dune was a step above that, but it was just toying the line between feeling like everything else. I did really like Dune though. So Christopher Walken joining it, that's kind of fun. I have no complaints about that. I think it's very cool. You know what else I think is cool? Cancellation season. No, I don't. I feel bad for everybody involved in all of these shows and the cancellation that come from them. A lot of people are out of work. A lot of people lost their jobs. That sucks. And I'm not going to just like spend time talking about every individual cancellation. It's just going to happen that way. You get understand. Is this the game name of the game? It happens. But there's one in particular I do want to talk about, and that's Naomi. Because Naomi, I think, is a perfect representation of when comic books blend too much into the marketability of a character. I was never the biggest fan of Naomi. I think she's fine. Again, I've always said this character felt like we have to get our multiversal character out before America Chavez appears. That's what she felt like as a character. So Bendis, I understand. I know Bendis is writing completely. He wrote this book to make it a TV show. That's apparent. But the TV show did not adapt much of the parts of the book that worked. Not that the book was brilliant, but there's just certain parts of it. You're like, this clearly feels like you're setting up for a larger universe in a television show. I understand completely why it failed. It's a thing of like placing too many bets on the same horse that you know is going to lose. You are putting way too much in this Naomi character without actually letting her breathe. And especially in the show, because I watched a couple episodes of it. It is hard to bear. It's very much just trying too hard to do all these things that don't work. And it just becomes a blended nightmare. And that's a problem. That becomes a problem. And then it's just like, you clearly made a book just to make it into a show, and that sucks. The other thing about this is, Ava DuVernay, once again, being screwed over by DC. And I get it. I get it. Sadly, I understand why you cancel New Gods, because you are an idiot, and you think people are going to associate this with Zack Snyder's Justice League. I get that completely. But Naomi was bound to fail, and I hate that she was associated with this. If I was DC, just greenlight anything she wants right now. Just literally do that. And there's some talk about like Discovery and how they want to do separate branches for these different projects and these worlds. We could get into that a different time, because I think that's a very important thing I do want to look at. I just want to say this. Everything that was canceled is sad. Naomi is especially sad because you really feel how this is going to affect the book sales for this character, how it's going to affect Ava DuVernay, and how it's going to change the comic book industry again, because maybe we're not going to just like make a character to be adaptable. You know, Kamala wasn't made just for TV. Well, of course she was, but it worked in a different way. And that's something I think a lot of people need to focus on. You know? More like Kamala, less like Naomi. And I think a lot of that comes down to Bendis and Ava, but whatever. Well, that's a discussion for another day. Goodbye, Naomi. I don't think anybody's going to miss you because you didn't do anything special to begin with. Moving on from Naomi, we jump to another show that's got me worried. I've openly talked about this on Twitter, and I want to talk about it again here. So Netflix has been making the Sandman TV show for who knows how long now. They just revealed some new pictures. It looks like it's coming this year. I am so nervous. I really need this to work. It needs to work. If this doesn't work, we're never doing the Sandman again. That's the sad truth. Because this is one of the most influential comic books and graphic novels and series ever made. Not just, I think in literature, it's an important story, and Neil Gaiman's a fantastic writer. But there's two things that worry me about this. One, your general audience is going to really need to focus to get this. Not that it's intense, but it is just a lot of idea and nuance and philosophy thrown at you, and like what is meaning is kind of like the theme of it. Also, Netflix is really canceling their big swings lately. They canceled Jupiter's Legacy after one season. It didn't even get to like its second week of release before they canceled it. Cowboy Bebop was canceled. Umbrella Academy is the standout because it's amazing it made it this far. But I think it's because that was already in production. Season 3 will be the last of Umbrella Academy. You can count on that. I really hope this finds its audience and helps the company grow, for Neil Gaiman's sake at least, but I don't have my hopes on it. I really think we'll get maybe 8 to 10 episodes, and they're going to cancel it. I will be watching day one. I will be supporting The Sandman day one because this story matters. The story has meaning. I want people to see it and feel something. But this really feels like the last-ditch effort of a book based in DC mythos, loosely based in DC mythos, that is being made by a non-HBO or Discovery program. So don't be surprised if this gets canceled, picked up by HBO in 4 years, and they move it from Netflix and bring it over there like they did of Daredevil and Jessica Jones. That's what they should have done from the beginning. Neil, if you just held out a little longer, I think you would have got your 5-season run. But I'm placing my bets now that it's going to be canceled after the first season. It looks good. You know, Lucifer looks great. I love Gwendolyn Christie, but I'm so nervous. I am so nervous that this thing is going to fall apart. And that scares me. Because this is important, man. This is the Sandman. It should work. And our final piece of news, we see that Pixar? Yeah, it's Pixar. I thought for a second it was Disney, but Disney and Pixar are making another feature film, Elemental, which will hit theaters June 16th, 2023, just in time for the Father's Day weekend. It is directed by Peter Son, who did The Good Dinosaur, and it's kind of, what's read here? Elemental journeys alongside an unlikely pair, Ember and Wade, in a city where fire, water, land, and air residents live together. The fiery young woman and the go-with-the-flow guy are about to discover something elemental. How much they actually have in common. There is some great concept art that I will show for you. This looks fantastic. I love this idea. This might be like the coolest concept they played with. I love the idea go with the flow is just with the water people. That's cool. This is fun. More Pixar, please. They have not released Pixar films in theaters for a long time. I have a lot of thoughts on Lightyear, which we will get to when we talk about Lightyear. But a new Pixar film in theaters next year. Hell yeah, brother. That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm staying for. That is all the news we have. When we come back, we're going to jump into the world of Hey, It's Tom Cruise. The magnanimous, the crazy, the interesting little man that is Tom Cruise. That's right, folks. We're talking Tom Cruise today. I could do a whole episode of the Geek Wave talking about his personal life, but I am not that kind of man. I am just the kind of man who says Patrick Stewart married a woman that's 40 years younger than him. That's all I say. I'm the kind of man that just says that. I don't really have anything bad to say about Tom Cruise, other than he's not the greatest guy. He's kind of weird, made some weird choices, made some weird religious choices, married the wrong people at times for the wrong reasons, and is not somebody I genuinely want to spend time with. All that said, I don't hate him. He is the last of the movie stars. And I've been saying this for a while now. There are few people left in Hollywood. I think it's him. I think it's Pitt. I don't know if there's any others where you just go, I'm solely going to watch a film because they're in it. You know, like you go because it is a Tom Cruise joint. You're not going for a director or a character or a franchise. You're going solely because it's Thomas Cruiseson. That's it, man. Like, that's this guy. And yeah, he's a weirdo. He's insanely happy. He's jumping on sofas because he's in love. He's a weird bro, but that's okay. Everyone in Hollywood is quirky. If you find someone in Hollywood who isn't quirky, it's just because they're Christopher Walken and they're quirky in a different way. So we're doing the filmography of one Tom Cruise. But because there are multiple layers to this man's craziness, we are only going to do up until the year 2000, because he has made a lot of films and has done a lot of stuff. And we're going to go through the list, maybe talk about it a little bit. We'll probably skip over a couple things that aren't important, but this man is crazy. And I love it for it. You know, he is just silly and weird, making weird shit. Kind of fun. So I got a list of his films from his debut in 1981 all the way up until 2000. And this is quite a list. And just looking at it, look, there's a lot of good films in here. Some of them are just okay, but a lot of good stuff. Say what you will about Cruise as a behind-the-scenes bloke, but the man loves making movies. He's excited to be a part of them. And I think you can really feel where the career shifts literally at the end of our list. So we start off in 1981, a little baby Cruise. That is 41 years ago. So he is in his 20s, or like he's like, what, 18 or around there? I did not look up his age. I know he's going to be 60 soon. The man hasn't aged a day. He looks fantastic. It's 1981. He does a cameo in a movie called Endless Love. If you have seen that, good on you, because I sure as hell haven't. He does another movie that year called Taps. Cool. Those are fine, I guess. Like, yeah, you got to start somewhere. And then you go literally to the next year. Homeboy finds his footing. Literally finds his footing. Because first off, he appears in The Outsiders, which is a film I know I'm going to talk about. Like, that book was so much a part of my childhood, mainly because, you know, curricular classes made me read it. He was Steve Randall, a character who doesn't get a lot of play, but you see it. There's a young Tom Cruise finding his footing before he becomes the movie star. Because in the same year, he kind of becomes the movie star. He does Losing It. Yeah, of course you do. That's what you would do. Sure, I don't really care. But then, my friends, you jump to that same year where he has done four films. You get Risky Business, which I think made him the man he is today. The smiling-go-lucky, sunglass-wearing, cool dude. Like, this made him cool. And All the Right Moves, which made him a movie star. I like both of these films. I like Risky Business a little bit more just because I'm like, this is insane. If that actually happened to you, that's weird. You need to slow down a minute. And All the Right Moves is great, too. I'm just like, this is it. This is the start of who he's going to be in the early parts of his career. Because like I said, when we get to the last one on this list, you feel the tonal shift in this man. You can kind of feel it in the 90s when he's growing up. But right here, when you see Risky Business, you see All the Right Moves, you understand what happens when he gets to 1986. So he's done four movies in 83, a couple of smaller roles, two kind of bigger ones that break him out into stardom. 85, he does Legend, which, I mean, yeah, everyone's got one of these. Legend is such a weird film. I don't really, like, enjoy it, but it's something I respect, you know? It's kind of interesting. Tim Curry is pretty cool in it. It's just a very weird film. It's got like a weird looking devil. It's kind of right there with like Willow for me, where I'm like, I understand why people like this. I just couldn't give a shit, you know? Yeah, it's like Willow for that. I've never been a fan of Willow, which kind of sucks to say, but it's just who I am, man. Willow was not for me, I guess. Willow was not for me. Because then after he does Legend and he does his weird fantasy thing, everyone does one, like I said, he jumps to 86, where he becomes Lieutenant Pete Mitchell. He becomes Maverick. And this makes him who he is today. He's literally still this character today. The reason we are talking about Tom Cruise today is because of Top Gun. And I have done an entire video on Top Gun. This movie is influential to my life. It's an important part of it. And I will stand by my statement that I said before. Top Gun is a phenomenal film. It is well acted, well directed, well crafted in every regard. Every character beat and every motivation makes sense. Every single piece of drama and conflict and action and comedy and harrowing journeys work in Top Gun. It is, I think, a film perfect for what it is trying to present. I wouldn't call it the best film ever made, but you are never going to find a film better than that for what it's trying to do. And that makes Tom Cruise, because he's cool, he's sexy, he's, you know, the rebel that everybody likes, but you can't look away. You see this guy, you just can't take your eyes off the magic. That is Tom Cruise. That is this man's career. Same time he does The Color of Money, which, yeah, people like that. People like The Color of Money. It's kind of cool. Not one I go back to, because, you know, you look at the list here and you're like, you know the ones you go back to all the time. Well, I know the ones I go back to all the time. 1988 comes around, he does a film called Cocktail, which, yeah, Cocktail was something. Not for me. Rain Man. I don't want to spend too much time dwelling on Rain Man. I feel like if we ever do a Dustin Hoffman thing, we'd spend more time on Rain Man. But I think it's a good movie. It's an interesting idea that is being explored in Rain Man. It's not one I particularly like. Love. Again, it's kind of there of The Color of Money, where it's like, I know what I'm watching here. I don't feel the need to spend that much time going back and revisiting Rain Man. It is a fascinating film, and it's definitely well made, and I understand people's love for it. I do like Rain Man. It's just like, that's a slower role for Tom Cruise, kind of. It's kind of just like him seeing like, okay, I was the cool guy. Let's see if I can do the drama guy. Then we get Born on the 4th of July in 89. Once again, believable, makes sense, cool. I get it. Like, this is where the shift kind of starts. Days of Thunder, he co-wrote that story, apparently. That's okay, man. Good for you, because you clearly needed that. Those are both good films. Again, this is like the era of Tom Cruise. I like the early stuff, Risky Business, All the Right Moves, Top Gun, and I guess you could put Rain Man in there. And then when it gets 89, I'm going to say maybe into 93. These are films that are very well made, but they're not ones I particularly go back and watch. Born on the 4th of July, fantastic. Days of Thunder, pretty good. Far and Away, great, I guess. I don't know. I've never seen it. A Few Good Men, amazing film. That is one of those scripts I go back and read all the time, because I think it's a great example of like making something dramatic just set in a certain area. And I think that is such a cool thing to explore. It's like, I love reading that script. It's such a cool movie. It shouldn't work the way it does, but the fact that it does makes it very impressive. And A Few Good Men, if you haven't seen it, it's really worth the investigation. It's a really interesting Tom Cruise, too, because he's just kind of like, again, getting to that era he's going to become later, where he is becoming the more mature individual. He's starting to find his footing. He's not the reckless man anymore. He's like committing to who he's going to become. And that's kind of exciting. Right? I think it's kind of interesting. So A Few Good Men in 92, same year as Far and Away. Good for him. I think that's exciting. I do like that. It's worth it. It's work. It's cool. Whatever. It's kind of fun. In 1993, we get The Firm, which is kind of fun, I guess. I don't remember it a lot. Because in 94, this is when we get to, like, you know, my stuff for Cruise. And when we come back next week and we talk about the 2000s and onwards, I think we'll have a lot more to say. But 1994, we get Lestat de Lioncourt. and he is in Interview with the Vampire. This, I remember when I first watched this film, it was a couple years back. I couldn't look away from what I was watching. It is just a really weird, interesting, dumb movie. I don't think it's smart. You know, I don't watch Interview with the Vampire. I'm like, this is brilliant. The best portrayal of vampires in society and ever. I don't think that. I'm just like, holy shit. This is just like watching a marital spat, you know, like a marital spat. Just these people who clearly love each other, but they don't explicitly say that. You know, the thing with him and Brad Pitt, like those two guys, here they go doing their weird thing. It's kind of weird. It's just a disturbing film, and it's so left field for Cruise at this point, because he's done like these really good dramas and action-y stuff, and you know, just become this guy that's like, what if I wear a really stupid wig and these stupid contacts and become this weirdo who's kind of in love with this dude and we want to have a kid together, but we're immortal, we make the girl immortal and she hates us for it, and there's a huge like battle or something at the end. It is so weird, but like that's kind of what I like from Tom Cruise, just weird. I want him to do like more stuff like this in the modern day, where it's less like, I'm the action hero, look at me jump out of a helicopter, put on a stupid wig and become this lunatic. That's what I want to see from you, man. That's what you should do more of, because that's what we're here, that's what we're paying for, Thomas. Do it, man. Do some weird stuff. So Interview with a Vampire is an insane film. I don't know if it's like good, but it's kind of cool, right? I guess. Oh, so brooding for no reason. Just so erotic, too. It's so, like, I don't want to say it's so gay, but it is really gay. It's just so, oh, insane. I like it, though. It's fun in all the weird ways. And then 1996 rolls around. A little franchise is about to be rebooted with the lead Ethan Hunt, because 1996, it's almost 30 years ago, we got our first Mission Impossible film with Tom Cruise. Can you believe that? 30 years ago, he's been doing this for like 25 years, this character. And this is a good film. I think the franchise picked up later on after this, but this is a good start. I like it more than some of the middle ones. It's kind of fun, you know, where he's building his team. He's building this identity for himself. He's becoming the spy guy. Iconic moments galore. Very cool. I feel like Mission Impossible deserves its own topic, but just seeing like this is who he is today. This and Jerry Maguire, which came out the same year, this makes him who he is today. You combine both those roles for him, Ethan Hunt and Jerry Maguire, that is going to carry him the rest of his career, because those give him so many more opportunities, and that is everything he becomes because of it. And that's fine. It's cool. Jerry Maguire, a film I've seen, yeah, a couple times. It, again, Tom Cruise is a guy I like more off-screen than I do on-screen, because I just love the insanity. I love hearing those stories of people just going to his house, watching him eat this weird dinner, and then this, like, you know, was it Russell Brand that said he went to, like, Tom Cruise's house and he gave him, like, a plate of spaghetti and he just sat there and watched him eat it? That's cool to me. That's weird, because that feels so in character for this lunatic. I love it. I love it. Like, that's weird. But Jerry Maguire, great romance, very fun stuff. Mission Impossible, you know the repercussions of this film. They are still talking about it today. They are still making it today. You know this thing matters. So, there you go. There you go. They're still making it. 1998, we get Without Limits. I don't know what that means. His character apparently is not available on Wikipedia, so, yeah, whatever. Then we get 1999, the experimental phase for Thomasin Cruiseson. He does Eyes Wide Shut, which is fascinating. This is him with Nicole Kidman, and they, of course, were together at this time, or during this time, or around this time. And, yeah, like, this is an interesting movie. It is so different than what I was expecting when I watched it, you know? I saw, like, those key moments, and I was like, this is just... yeah, this is a little too voyeur for me, and as much as I'm okay with that kind of concept, I don't need to see it in this aspect, so I don't really enjoy that part of it. But it's kind of cool. I think it's really when I started to notice Nicole Kidman, so Rightio, pip pip cheerio, and all that. But then you get Magnolia, and yeah, man. Oh, Magnolia's fantastic. A really good film with a great cast that really tried to tell a cool story. I really just like it. It's really interesting. It's really creative. And it's a little bit, you know, it's kind of like classic. It falls into like that style of the time, you know. I'm trying to, like, what's the right word? Like, kind of Boogie Nights style. Well, that's the point, isn't it? It's kind of like in that idea, but it's a good film. Cool characters, a cool concept. I enjoy watching it. It's just really fun. Is it? Yeah, it's Paul Thomas Anderson. I couldn't remember for a second, but yeah, I think it is. Just an interesting, bizarre film. I don't know, kind of cool. Again, it's kind of experimental for him doing like this kind of more ensemble-y thing, but it's working well. It got him this far too. In 99, he does a lot of weird stuff. You see who he's going to become in 96 with these cool roles, these Mission Impossibles, these Jerry Maguires. And then you get to 99 where it's like, nah, dude, sex cults and Paul Thomas Anderson. And I'm like, yep, you got it, man. You worked with some great directors that year. But then, like all good things, you have to come back to your baby. Because 4 years after he starts his role as Ethan Hunt, we come to the end of this section. Because it is the year 2000. And Tom Cruise returns to the Mission Impossible franchise. And he is doing the worst Mission Impossible in this one. Is this the worst movie? He's climbing a cliff on the side. He's throwing sunglasses away. I think this is the worst one. I can't remember because they all kind of blend into one after four. I don't know, right? Because, okay, there's 1, 2, 3, Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, Fallout, and then Phantom Car or something coming out. Phantom Punch, something stupid. Okay. Yeah, this is the worst one, right? He had the worst hair in this one. He had the worst look in this one. This is the one that sucked, right? It's just not interesting. It's just not interesting. So, yeah. There you go. Tom Cruise is just not interesting. And these are all really good films. Well, not all of them. Might I say that? I don't know. There's a lot of good films in here, I should say. So normally, I do like to end things with recommendations, and that's kind of what I'm going to do here. This is going to be the recommendation segment where we're going to look back on the list and talk about the best one kind of from each era. You have the young Risky Business era, and obviously the best ones in that era are Risky Business, All the Right Moves, and Top Gun. I would put The Outsiders in there, but that's not really his movie. From there on, you get things like Rain Man and Born on the 4th of July and Days of Thunder and A Few Good Men. Those are very interesting films, too. They're good. Then you get, of course, Interview with a Vampire. One of the weirdest, quirky things I've ever seen. Very bizarre. From that, you get The Mission Impossibles, and then you get Magnolia and Eyes Wide Shut. You just feel like this guy's just like, I'm just going to make the weirdest shit ever. I have the power now. Watch me just do some weird stuff. And that's what it does. And I'm like, yeah, man, I support it. You do you, man. If you want to make something weird, do it. Who am I to stop you? Make whatever you want. I really don't care. It's all interesting. You're an interesting man. You got a distinctive feature. You got a distinctive identity for you. So, of course, I'm going to follow what you do. I'm going to follow your career and smile upon it because that's all you can hope for with a guy like this. That a movie star is born in the 80s and he is still going strong 40 years later. That's impressive. Who really has that kind of legacy? Who really has that legacy? Nobody. That's impressive, man. That's really cool. And that's going to do it for part one of our exploration of the filmography of Thomasin Cruiseson. Fantastic man. Weird religious thing. Probably will never marry again. But that's probably for the best too, isn't it? Like, does he need to marry? Who knows? Probably shouldn't be kissing people on screen either. It just doesn't feel right when he does it anymore. All right. Thank you guys so much for watching this video. Be sure to like and subscribe to the channel. If you have any topic recommendations, please let me know. Leave them in the comments, email them to me. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. If you are listening to this on the podcast feed, please give us a rating. Really helps out. As always, you can check me out on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. As always, I will catch you in the next one. Have fun. Stay safe. Good luck.